In any normal year, the holidays can be stressful. This episode was recorded in the year 2020, not a normal year by any stretch of the imagination, and a year that has brought us a whole new level of stress. You're tired, I'm tired. And so this episode of Inside Wine Podcast is for you. It's my way of giving thanks to you for listening. Hopefully, it helps you enjoy Thanksgiving and the rest of the holidays this year. Thank you, listener. This is the Inside Wine Podcast. I'm Joe Janisch, a wine industry professional since 1996, giving you insider tips to make the right wine decisions. Today, our special guest is Mark J. Sievers, who is a cookbook author and an entertaining expert. And Mark, I'm so glad that you joined us today.
Thank you, Joe, for having me. It's such a pleasure to talk about all things fall entertaining.
Yeah. And, you know, I've read your books, I've seen you on television and seen you speak on things. And with the holidays coming up, I thought it would be great to have you on and help people kind of like de-stress their holidays a little bit with entertaining. I mean, it can be such a stressful time to have people over and figure out how they can make their meal beautiful and have their guests happy and all that. And you are the one person I know who could help people feel a little more confident and not so stressed about the holidays. So maybe, you know, before we get into the gist of everything, maybe just tell our listener what it is that you do and how you can help that person with entertaining and everything else that you do.
Yeah. So I think you set it up perfectly. So, you know, like you said, I'm a cookbook author, entertaining expert. I grew up in Massachusetts, really idolizing my grandmother. She stayed home and took care of all of the grandchildren. And what I loved about her the most is that she spent her days from the time she woke up to the time she went to sleep cooking for all of us. And,
wow.
And I mean, three meals a day and snacks. And it wasn't elaborate food, but it really was food filled with love. You know, at the beginning of my childhood, I actually, my family, we're struggling a little bit with money, and we actually grew up in the projects for a little while and relied on, you know, help from the government. And she still somehow always managed to make whatever means she had feel really, really special. And I've kind of taken that into what I do now. You know, I grew up watching Julia Child and Jacques Pepin, like so many of us have.
Right? Right.
You know, I grew up watching reruns, of course.
Yes.
But it was always so inspiring to just see food. And I flunked my English courses all the time because I actually hated reading. But I loved reading cookbooks, and I still love reading cookbooks. And that kind of is how I really have gotten to where I am today. I started writing books about 10 years ago because I think there's, with so many books and I don't want to say oversaturation, but there's a lot of information out there on what we call the internet. And I think it's really interesting to see different people's perceptions of what home cooking is. And my voice is really about not only about home cooking, but also really great home skills for entertaining. And putting those two together for me just comes really natural. And I'm so fortunate to be able to test recipes. And, you know, as a kid, they always said, don't play with your food. Well, I get to do that as my career. And it's been really a wonderful journey. And I just had a new book come out in November of 2019 called French Omelets, Your New House Meal. And that book in particular is all about the classic French omelet and how it's more than just, I think Americans think of omelets as a breakfast.
Yes, of course.
Thing. And in France, omelets are an around the clock way of eating. So that book, French Omelets, Your New House Meal, I had a lot of fun writing that book and testing that book, and brought me to Paris for 3 weeks, lived in a beautiful apartment there and just recipe tested and photographed and really just lived that Parisian life. I love Paris. It's my favorite place other than New England, of course.
Of course.
And it's been a really wonderful experience to see how Europeans and the French also entertain, because it's really much simpler than what Americans do. And that's what I try to encourage my readers or viewers on YouTube channel. And, you know, even just in social media, I really try to just give them what I think is like the most earthy and elegant way of entertaining your friends and family. So long way around your question. That's how I got into the food biz. Never owned a restaurant, never went to culinary school, but really just have been hyper focused for decades, really, on understanding really good but basic ingredients.
Yeah. This is why I really wanted to talk to you about holiday entertaining, you specifically, because I think I told you offline, I have your omelet book. It's been sitting in front of our entire family for months and months, and we make the omelets.
I stare down at you all day long. Is what you're
all day long, you're staring at me and staring at my little kids and my wife. And my wife always used to say, oh, you know, why do we have to make such a big elaborate meal? Like when, you know, when I was single, I could just make an omelet for dinner. And I'd be like, what? Yeah. Omelet for dinner? I mean, come on, that's breakfast.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had to read your book and my eyes were opened. And I'm like, yeah. And, but, you know, you touched on it. Americans do, for whatever reason, feel like they have to do such a big elaborate thing. And maybe it's because we see these things on television and we feel like we have to do that and do something as grandiose as that. And I'm glad you mentioned traveling to Europe and seeing things a lot differently. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of the things you've seen. Like how simple is it in France to put on a party or a holiday party or something like that for family?
You know, the French really do. They love food. They love great food. They love great wine. But what they love the most is the experience of their company.
Right.
And, you know, when I have a dinner party, I like to think of it as office hours. It's going to be like an 8-hour thing. We're going to, any dinner party that's under 4 hours in my house meant, something went wrong. Or, you know, maybe the guests weren't vibing the way I thought they would.
Right.
But I like to think of a dinner party as office hours because it really should be this drawn out in a good way of gathering and raising glasses and nibbling food. And in Europe, it's really wonderful because they do rely on, of course, some home cooked dishes. They'll rely on a really good bakery for their dessert or patisserie for their dessert. And appetizers here, we think of, you know, when we go out for dinner sometimes or when we're entertaining, we think we have to put out 17 different things before we even get to the first course of a dinner party. And by that, everybody's full.
Yep.
I can only eat so much cheese in so many forms. It can't be solid and melted and grated and shredded. You know, we need, and you know, what I have been really inspired by is all the hotel bars in Europe and in the United States. We have some fabulous hotels in this country that they put out great crispy salty potato chips and olives or little nuts or maybe some just very simple things. And I've really started to instill that kind of in my own household and to others with, you know, if you're going to make something from scratch for an appetizer, it doesn't need to be this big melting pot of cheese. It can be something very simple. What comes to mind are these zucchini rouleaux that I have. They're zucchini kind of ribbons that are filled with goat cheese. It's been infused with honey and oregano and some pistachios and salt and pepper. And you just roll it up like a little bite and you put a little toothpick and a basil leaf. It's super simple. It gives your guest a little something to nibble on while they're sipping a glass of Tétanger. And they get the experience of flavors and textures, but they're not going to be full by the time they sit down. And, you know, I want to touch on your thing of how Americans feel like everything has to be so elaborate here. There's two sides of me. I have the consumer side, which is my books and YouTube channel and website and all of that, which is really where my heart is. But I also have a commercial side to me. I do a lot of big campaigns, food styling for magazines and billboards and all these things. And sometimes I'll be on set and I'll be like, oh my God, the average person is never, I'm having a hard time making this look fabulous. The average person is never going to be able to recreate what they see in this photograph.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think sometimes when you're at home and you're flipping through a beautiful cookbook or you're flipping through a magazine, yes, the images are stunning, but I find that sometimes people get like let down because of how theirs turned out.
Exactly.
And I am like the complete opposite with my books and website. I don't put all of my quote unquote food styling skills to the test when I'm photographing for the Mark Sievers brand. What you see on my website or in books is really, it's the final test. There's really not anything done to it to make it look more appetizing or appealing than it really is. It just takes really good ingredients, and simplicity is key. And that is what I have found over the years of entertaining throughout the year, especially during the holidays.
Yeah. And you know, you talked about this, what was the zucchini thing that you just described?
The zucchini and goat cheese rouleau. Rouleau means roll up in French.
Okay. See, that it sounded really fancy.
Right, doesn't it? And it's like zucchini from the grocery store.
Yeah. It's things like that. Like, so I guess you must really toe a fine line going both ways as food stylist and entertaining expert. I'm just trying to like think like this zucchini thing. You can be beautiful without being too elaborate. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's like when you see a convertible, you know, when you see like a really old, slightly, I call it a convertible with a patina, and it pulls up and you're like, that's so cool. That looks great to ride in, versus you see some really expensive brand new with shiny paint and there's not a scratch. And you're like, that's intimidating.
Yeah.
That's how I think of food. I like food. I like things to have a patina to them. I like things to have an earthiness to them and an ease to them. I hope that's a good reference.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, I leave the really shiny, shiny food for 5-star restaurants that have little dots of sauces and foam and eyeballs and all of that stuff. For me, I keep it really simple. Like on the stove right now is a big pot of my company-worthy vegetable soup for the weekend. It's a crisp day. It's going to be a crisp weekend. And I just have a big pot of vegetable soup on the stove. And the house smells great. And we can eat it throughout the weekend with a big salad and some bread from our local bakery and some great wine. And that, to me, is just as satisfying as a 3 or 5-course meal. I'm noticing that people are eating differently these days. They're not necessarily wanting big, massive entrees. And it's going into the direction of a soup, a salad, some bread, a great dessert, some good bubbles, some wine. And I love that about entertaining, how it is so interchangeable and you can really make it your own.
Yeah. You touched on something before saying that, like, people can feel very intimidated because what they're making doesn't look like how it looks on that, in that cookbook or on that TV show. Like theirs doesn't quite look the same. And it kind of reminded me of my yoga instructor who, you know, I'm trying to follow the different poses.
Yeah.
And clearly not getting them. And thank goodness there isn't a mirror for me to look at right while I'm doing them, because I could see on her face that I'm doing them wrong. But then she just says, you know, just do it the way you do it. It doesn't have to look like I'm doing it. It doesn't have to look like a certain way. And it's kind of like the same thing you just said. Like it doesn't have to look like the way the expert makes it. And I think as soon as someone gets that and that intimidation is gone, it becomes so much easier.
I 1000% agree with you. I think the other thing too is you have to cook what's interesting to you.
Hmm.
So when I'm at home testing recipes, if I'm testing a recipe over and over and over again, or I'm coming up with the concept, or I'm just in the midst of doing it, if it starts to get boring to me, it's absolutely going to be boring to the person at home.
Mm.
So when I say cook what you're interested in, if you don't find baking a 3-tier cake interesting, or learning how to make buttercream dahlias, if that's not interesting to you, you're not going to be invested in it in your own kitchen. You're just going through it to go through the motions.
Right.
And that's never going to come out. I don't think you'll ever be proud of that.
Yeah.
Or you're going to not like how it tastes, or you may not want to even have your friends or family taste it. So I think people should find what they're really interested in. And if you don't know what you're interested in food, then take the time to explore. You know, really, instead of just cooking through a cookbook, read the cookbook from cover to cover. Get a sense of who that person is. Get a sense of their little anecdotes and their aesthetic. And get a sense, you know, I know we all use the word vibe, but like, find who you really vibe with. And if it means, you know, for me, like, I'm a vegetarian, so all of my recipes are vegetarian. But it doesn't mean that you can't make a beautiful roast chicken to go with my fresh herb salad and my Provençal vegetable tea. You don't need this repertoire of 400 recipes. But I think that's why, you know, there are personalities like Julia Child are so successful. Their legacy continues because people are interested in her food, but they're more interested in her.
Yeah.
And they trust her.
You know, this is almost like an inverse way that I think a lot of people look at how to plan a meal for a party or get together. I think there's a lot of thought put into what will impress my guests or what will my guests want. And it's about, you know, pleasing, because that's what you want to do. You want to please your guests. But what you're saying is maybe not necessarily be concerned about pleasing your guests, but be pleased about the process.
Correct. And, you know, I love how intuitive you are with that, because if you spend a week preparing for a meal, a dinner party, which people used to do.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who does that anymore. But if you spend a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of effort trying to put on, you know, we'll call it airs.
Yeah.
Trying to make things so over the top and so fancy, and your guests arrive and you're clearly happy to see them, but you're also like not really clicked in. And in the back of your head, all you can think about is, oh my God, the timing of this.
You're stressed out. Yeah.
And you're stressed out. Your guests are going to be like, oh God, maybe we came too early, or maybe she's had a bad day, or maybe he's had a bad day and we have inconvenienced them by being here.
Yeah.
That is, the more fun you have at you're going to set the tone of your own party, whether it's a party for two or a party for 10, you're going to set the tone for how your guests feel and how comfortable they are with. Are you serving things in your grandmother's bowls and things have chips and maybe the silver has a little bit of tarnish to it? That to me is super chic versus a gleaming table where, like, you know, even like your childhood friend is like, I don't know which fork to use. You know?
Yeah. Or they're afraid to touch things because they might break.
To touch things. Or, you know, everything doesn't have to be so shiny and gleamy. This is not a commercial for the Kardashians. With all due respect to the Kardashians, but this is really about, you're inviting people into your home. So make it feel like they're in your home, not at somebody else's home or in a showroom.
Yeah, I think some people are going to have a hard time grasping that, because there is still that wanting to like impress and show what you can do. And what's going through my mind right now, and I've been guilty of it and I've witnessed it, is people that are like, okay, I heard this recipe is great, and they dig it out and they start doing it, and it's something that they've never done before.
Yeah.
But because it's the fancy recipe from whoever it was, and they try it, and then just what you said, it doesn't work out or doesn't look right. And then they get stressed, and then the people are coming through the door. And to your point, it's become not a fun event anymore. It's become more of a, like a test or something.
If you have never made a souffle, a blue cheese or Stilton souffle in your life, you absolutely should not be trying it for the very first time when you've got six people coming for dinner. Right?
So I
don't even try new recipes on my friends and family for dinner. My husband is the guinea pig. Luckily, he loves everything I make, and he's my biggest fan, and he has a good appetite. But you know, I've served him some pretty crappy things that I'm like, well, that didn't turn out. But I always say to people, never make something for the first time for guests. because you have to be comfortable with making the process of it. And you have to be comfortable with how it tastes to begin with. You all can't be tasting the same. You know, it's like that scene from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, where they make the, one of the characters makes that they sit down for their Christmas dinner and she made the turkey. She'd never made a turkey before, I think. And she, they sat down and they carved the turkey and it was so dry, like, you know, popped open and the steam, you know, the smoke came out and it was not inedible. Don't be that person. If you're going to make a turkey for Thanksgiving, do a test run.
Yeah. We're trying to de-stress the holidays. We've touched on a few of these things. So I guess we could call that rule number one. Rule number one, make sure it's something that you're comfortable making, something you've made before, something you're confident making, something that to you, what you said before, you have fun making, that you enjoy. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's a good way to de-stress the holiday.
I mean, that right there is, that's your game plan, really.
Okay.
I really think that, especially holidays this year, that holidays are going to look, you know, we're in the middle of a global pandemic here.
Yeah. Yep.
Holidays are going to look very different this year. I think back to my childhood where we would have a Christmas Eve open house and 100 people would come through.
Oh boy.
And it was some of the best memories of my life. And I still reference them like I am today with you. But I think this year it's going to be about more even simplicity is key and keeping things really just genuine. And nobody right now is looking for anything fancy. I think everybody's looking for coziness and
comfort.
So
yeah,
every Christmas Eve, I make a big pan of Stilton and pear macaroni and cheese. I serve it with a big salad. I serve it with a sourdough boule. Sometimes I make the boules myself. I have a great recipe called Weekend Sourdough Boule. It's the easiest boule you could ever make at home. It's foolproof. And if there have been times where maybe I've had a little too much champagne during the day trying to, you know, put more decorations up, or, you know, I'm just enjoying Christmas Eve afternoon and the bread I forgot about 2 days beforehand. So I go to my local bakery. But, you know, it's really about, I think, this year, just finding what foods you remember as a child and figuring out your way of maybe creating those or having that memory of, well, I'm not the best cookie decorator. To me, decorating sugar cookies with different colors of piping and putting all of this work into them, I drive a hot poker into my eye. I would much rather make my rolled vanilla bean cookies and decorate them with that red and green sanding sugar that I remember as a kid.
Right.
And everybody's going to love them just as much.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to your point. Like, it should be something that you enjoy doing. Like, if our listener enjoys making beautiful cookies, then make beautiful cookies.
You should
do that.
And you should send me some. And you some.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, again, like, I think because of the pandemic, people are, maybe it is going to be easier to pull off a stress-free holiday because there won't be as much worry about how the food is going to look and taste and everything else. It's going to be more about people being together, I think, if they can find a way to get together. But
exactly.
Maybe you can give us some more tips, though, on like how we might be able to navigate this holiday season with, like, what kind of things can you prepare in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I think when I think about what people are focused on right now and trying to maintain is not using shared utensils or not eating out of the same pan or the same, so like family style might not be comfortable for some people.
No double dipping those chips.
No double dipping. So you know what I like to do, and I've been doing it for years. They're called individual soiree-sized cheese boxes. And you can make them in any size. All these links, all these recipes that I've mentioned are all available at marksievers.com. So all of your listeners can go back and reference all of this.
Yeah, we'll put them in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, perfect. And these soiree-sized cheese boxes are really just individual charcuterie boards. But they're in a self-contained box. So you make, if you have 10 guests, you make 10 boxes. And they're essentially just everything you need in an individual serving. So cheese, some flatbreads, breadsticks, some fruit, some nuts, some cornichons, some chocolate. Maybe you want to put some beautiful prosciutto or some, maybe your family loves mortadella, you know, whatever your family likes. If you have guests that are gluten-free, you can have some with gluten-free crackers, but that way there, everyone's fingers aren't going into the cheese and going into the jam or the preserves.
Right.
And they're very chic and they're so simple to do. And people really do go crazy for them. I've actually done them for some very high profile clients and brands in the past years, and they think they're just the best thing since sliced bread. I agree with them because obviously I made them, but it's always happy to hear. I'm always happy to hear that people enjoy creative ideas. So that's a perfect way to start out the holidays. And that's all you need. You don't need that plus a big bowl of this and plus an appetizer of that. You just need those. You could put in some fresh figs if you can find some. And then when it comes to, you know, this year for Christmas, I will still make my Stilton and Pear macaroni and cheese, but I'll put it in individual gratin dishes or oven-proof dishes so that they're individual servings. And I think that's going to be the key to feeling comfortable this year with the holidays and being together as individual servings. So that you're really making sure that not only are you comfortable, but also your guests feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And keeping a glass filled is always a way to distract from anything.
Yeah. Well, this is the Inside Wine Podcast. So yeah.
Well, and you know, let me ask you a question about wine, because I want to see if you have the same ratio as I do. Yeah. When I plan for a dinner party, I plan for one bottle of wine per person.
Yep. That's exactly what I do.
Is that what you do too? That's good to know.
Yeah.
I'm asking the experts, so this is good.
And people always say, isn't that going to be too much? I'm like, it's okay to have a little extra wine left over. Yeah,
that's what you end up drinking at 2 a.m. while you're trying to clear the table.
That's exactly right.
And I have another question for you.
Sure. Well,
I know, because since I am talking to the expert on wine, do you think that wine pairings are still on people's radar, like white with fish or chicken or red with meat? Or do you think that people now should just drink whatever they really love and just enjoy the moment?
Oh, that's a trick question now, isn't it? Because we are trying to de-stress the holidays, and and trying to find the perfect wine pairing can be stressful. Look, to me, wine is food. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of ways, I look at it almost like as when I'm cooking something, I look at it as almost like a sauce. So would I put, this tomato sauce on this particular fish? I probably wouldn't, because those two things wouldn't go together so well if it was a particular kind of sauce and particular kind of fish. So yes, there's the part where, you know, drink what you like. I'm 100% behind drink what you like, but at the same time, I do feel like there could be some thought put into the wine pairing so that, you know, the wine doesn't clash with the food, so that there isn't a focus on one or the other, or one outshining the other, or I think it just needs to all go together well. But it's hard, because especially in the United States, Americans don't quite grasp that whole wine as food thing as they do in Europe. So it's more like a beverage. It's like, you know, people will drink Diet Coke with a bowl of spaghetti. I don't get it. I don't understand that. But
yeah,
so people do, for the people who see wine and food separately, fine, drink what you like.
Yeah,
whatever, drink a Cabernet with flounder, be my guest. But and I feel like things should kind of go a little better together, but don't stress about it.
So I find that so interesting. And the reason I asked, because, you know, whenever I'm entertaining, if I know a particular friend or family guest that's coming, if they love Pinot Noir, I'll always make sure I have a Pinot Noir on hand.
Sure, yes.
But for the most part, when I'm entertaining, and the reason I ask this is because when I'm entertaining at home, I really have four things on hand. I have a French Chardonnay.
Nice.
I have a Cote d'Aron style wine, red.
Perfect.
I always have rosé, and I'm sorry, I've loved rosé way before it was rosé all day was cool.
Me too.
Rosé, it just so happens rosé and my Gruyère fondue together are delicious. And I always have great bubbles in the fridge. And I find with those, and you know, I try to buy my wine, especially for larger parties, at the same grocery stores that I get all my ingredients at. And, you know, Louis Jadot, I know, is a very familiar brand out there. I think their price point is amazing, between, you know, 10 and 15 bucks a bottle.
Yep.
I think that's great for that. That is a wonderful French wine at a great price. And you can buy multiple bottles.
Yes.
But I always find that it's a crowd pleaser too, because it still has great body. It still has great flavor, but it's not too exotic for people's palates. So I always like to point that out, because to me, that's really important.
I'm glad you did. That's actually the daily drinker here at the Janish household. We have Louis Jadot Macon Village is constantly here because, to your point, it goes well with just about everything. It tastes great on its own. It seems fancy because it's French and it's Chardonnay. Yeah, right? So people are like, oh, I never had a Chardonnay like this, because they're thinking of a, you know, maybe a oaky California version.
Yeah, very oaky. Yep. That Louis Jadot is so smooth.
It is. And, you know,
since we're talking, which we are on a wine podcast, I thought I should,
we should talk my a little muscles. Bit. Yeah. Yeah. And you know,
I don't have very many muscles about wine, but the few that I do, I'm going to try to impress you.
Well, I'm color me impressed, because I'm a little embarrassed now, because I think your answer to the wine question was better than my answer, and a little simpler, because those four selections that you keep on hand are exactly the right answer, because those type of wines, a Cote d'Aron, like a Grenache, or, you know, if it's a Cannonau from Italy or whatever it is, it's a nice light red. It has some acidity, but not too much acidity, lower in tannins. And when you have wines like that, like a French Chardonnay, like the Louis Jadot, Macon Village, or Puy Fuissé, or whatever it is, they're, again, they're not over the top flavors. They're not, like I said, you know, sometimes an oaky Chardonnay is great, like if you're just drinking it on its own, but once you start,
it makes me tired.
Yeah.
I hate saying this because it sounds very pretentious, but it exhausts my palate. You know? We don't want that. We want to keep our palates light and bright and happy and in conversation with one another and hydrated.
Right. Yeah. Look, and I do love an oaky Chardonnay, like a Cake Bread or St. Francis or Sequoia Grove at certain times. But
absolutely.
When you have a big group and you're going to have a lot of different dishes, you want something that might be a little more neutral.
Yeah.
And not neutral saying in a bad way. It's actually a good way. And those are very, that's a very friendly selection to have. A rosé is always goes with everything. Louis Jadot. Well,
I'm glad I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, you got it. You nailed it.
Great. Because I've been telling people this for about 12 years. So I'm glad my advice over the past decade has been the right advice.
Yeah, it's absolutely spot on.
Good.
Yeah. All right. So we have a couple good things to help people out de-stress their holidays. We want to make sure. So. Yeah, we want to be prepared. We want to make what we like to make and comfortable making. Are there any other tips that maybe we haven't had a chance to look at? Like, you know, you mentioned a lot of these different dishes and preparations. To me, they sound very fancy. Maybe it's because you know how to say those French words correctly and I don't. But they sound more complex.
It's the only French word I know how to use.
I'm guessing that these things sound more complex than they are. How can a person learn to make these things? And I'm sure you're going to point to one of your cookbooks.
Well, you know, for me, again, because I'm not a trained chef and I don't like being referred to as a chef, I love being called a home cook because that's what I am. That is what my foundation has been built on, is just home cooking. Not even fancy home cooking, just using really good ingredients from the grocery store. You know, for me, like a Provençal Tillon, that does sound very fancy.
It sounds very fancy, yes.
It is like one of the simplest side dishes you could possibly make. It's in my cookbook, French Omelets, Your New House Meal. It's also on my website. And it's really just thinly sliced vegetables arranged in a circular pattern with olive oil, garlic, and fresh thyme and rosemary sprigs, and you bake it for like 70 minutes. and the vegetables turn into like this velvety, creamy deliciousness. The olive oil at the bottom of it's really a casserole dish, gets infused with all of the aromatics. And then when all of the vegetables are gone, everybody reaches for big hunks of bread, and you can drizzle the olive oil onto the bread, and then you could serve a little bit of even some cheese with that, and there's your cheese course with some delicious bread and infused olive oil. I mean, that to me, now I'm hungry. That to me.
Yeah, me too.
That to me is a great party.
Yeah, I clearly should have had lunch before we got on this call.
I agree. I am drinking a little bit of bubbles to make sure that I am making you proud. And now I'm very hungry. But it really is. Don't get caught up if you can't say the name of the recipe or you can't say a particular word. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. As long as you believe in what you're cooking and as long as you are confident of what you are putting forth on the table, that's all that matters.
And at the end of the day, it's really just about everybody getting together and enjoying the day.
That's good food, good wine, good laughter, good company.
That's it. That's all we need. And love.
That's all you need. And love.
All right, Mark, you've given us so much really good advice. Now, where can our listener go to find more advice from you? Where can my listener connect with you?
So, Joe, thanks so much for having me on your podcast. It's really fun to talk about holiday entertaining.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think this year is going to be more creative than ever. To help your listeners with that creative process, they can all head to my website, marksievers.com. That is the easiest way to learn more about my cookbooks, all of my recipes, my YouTube channel, all my social media, including Instagram, and it's kind of like a one-stop shop.
Great. Perfect. We have a link in the show notes, and I just want to say thanks again, Mark. It's been a pleasure and an honor to speak with you today.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you, Joe, and happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you, and same to yours.
Thanks, Joe.
Mark and I hope that this episode will help de-stress your holidays. Lord knows we can all use some de-stressing right now, so why don't you tell a friend about this episode so they can feel a little less stressed as well. Check out the show notes for links to Mark's website, his social media channels, and his cookbooks. In the show notes, you'll also find recipes to all of the dishes we discussed, as well as a number of bonus stress-free recipes that Mark selected. Boy, this is a lot of S's. I'll be back with another episode after Thanksgiving, and in the meantime, be sure to visit wine365.com for more tips on wine and holiday entertaining. I wish you and yours a safe and happy bird day. Please remember, wine is food. It comes from a place. Enjoy it responsibly.